This podcast is brought to you by Intrepid Travel, the global leaders in immersive, sustainable, small group travel experiences. Take yourself away from the world you know and be open, curious, fearless, and challenged. Be intrepid. Visit intrepidtravel.com to book your next trip today. You're not going wine tasting in France anytime soon. I'm sorry, but that's the truth. You're not going outdoor adventuring in Canada. You're not going street food feasting in Thailand. The world has changed, and for now, we're restricted to only seeing a small part of it. But that doesn't mean the fun has to stop. It doesn't mean that those wild and amazing experiences you had planned to enjoy overseas this year, wild and amazing experiences you probably had to cancel or put on hold due to current coronavirus restrictions, can't be achieved right here at home. All you need to do is get creative and dig a little deeper. Hi, I'm Ben Groundwater, and you're listening to Flight of Fancy, the traveller.com.au podcast. Today, we're going to do something a little different. Today, we're taking all of those amazing experiences you may have been planning to have overseas this year, and we're figuring out how to do them in Australia and New Zealand instead. We're going to fulfill your travel dreams, only with less actual travel and more support for locals who've been hit hard by the events of the last 6 months. And in doing so, we're going to show you just how much the Antipodes as a travel destination has to offer. And of course, to do that, I will need help, which today comes in the form of two highly experienced travellers who've seen it all both near and far. First up, she's a regular on Flight of Fancy, a writer for traveller.com.au who this year was supposed to be hiking in Japan and train tripping through Namibia and coffee sipping in Venice, among many, many other things, Uta Jonker. Hi there, Uta.
Hey, Ben, how are you going?
I'm very well. Thanks so much for joining us. Also with us, she's a traveller writer who should be in Ethiopia right now working on a book, Sue Williams. Hi there, Sue.
Hi, Ben.
Thanks a lot for coming along, guys. So obviously, you know, as I've explained, some big plans have had to change this year. But Sue, do you think that could be a good thing in some ways? Is this a good opportunity to see more of Australia?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Australia has so much to offer. And sometimes we spend so much time planning our trips overseas, we kind of forget what's right on our own doorstep. And of course, Australia has a huge range of landscapes, an amazing range of things to see and things to do. We have the same currency. We speak mostly the same language. So it can be a great place to visit. We just don't see enough of Australia, I don't think.
For sure. And Uta, that's quite an amazing list of things that you're not going to be doing this year. Are you excited about, you know, potentially turning that into things to do a little closer to home?
I'm a little bit torn because, you know, I'm a list maker and a planner, and it's kind of like, well, who ripped my list in half? But look, what is really exciting, I think there's two things, one of which is there's a lot of classic Australian destinations that a lot of us put off because we know they're there. I mean, the classic is every time I mention Uluru to someone, 9 times out of 10, they say to me, oh, yeah, I'm going to get there one day. And this is an opportunity to finally book those places we've always wanted to go. But the other thing I think we underestimate is, aside from those signature destinations, there is such a lot of diversity in terms of if you go to rural South Australia or rural Tasmania or rural Western Australia, just the experiences can be so different. And that's actually what I'm excited about. I've done a lot of exploring in Australia, but the country's so big, there's plenty more places to see.
Absolutely. And now this was my idea to kind of take the experience you think you were going to have overseas and try to recreate it in Australia instead. Do you guys, you know, is that a mistake in some ways to try to do a like for like? Or is this actually a good way of kind of realizing just how much Australia and New Zealand have to offer?
I think it's a great way to approach Australia, really, because we take so much of it for granted. But when you start thinking about some of the real joys of travel overseas and start drilling back down and thinking, what possibly do we have that's in some way kind of a little bit equivalent in Australia? You start looking at it through a different lens, really, and you start thinking, well, actually, I could go on a river cruise on the Murray instead of going on a river cruise in Hungary. And why would that be so different? And would there be other things that I'd really enjoy about it as well? So I actually think it's a really good idea, Ben.
Oh, thank you, Sue. I mean, one of the things that I reason I did it was, you know, obviously we are restricted to traveling only a little way at the moment. And so I kind of had to dig down into what is it that I love about international travel? What is it that I chase when I'm out there? And then to realize that you can do that in Australia. You know, obviously I love hiking and somewhere like South America, Peru is an incredible hiking destination. I think to myself, well, you know, you can have those sorts of experiences in Australia. I also love traveling through Southern and East Africa for those big landscapes and that amazing, indigenous culture around there. And I think about, you know, if I'm drawn there for that, then I can do that in Australia as well. Uta, you know, there is so much of that you can do in Australia that does have a parallel in the rest of the world, doesn't it?
Oh, totally. And it is that thing of we always go for the exotic. I mean, like you, I'm a big hiker and I love a bit of a long distance trail. I'm not going to do it for such a long distance, but I love doing a little bit of it. And, you know, you could do them in Italy and you could do them in Chile and you could do to all these great places. But, you know, you could go to WA and do the Bibbulmun Track, or you can go to the Northern Territory and do the Larapinta Trek. And they have fantastic experiences that we just need to think a bit more creatively.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, of course, you know, there are some things that we definitely can't recreate here, and that's just something that we have to live with. You know, Uta, I think you mentioned the sartorial elegance of an Italian street is probably going to be a little bit difficult to recreate here.
What we are going to miss is those things that when you step into a foreign place and that first sensory impact, which in Italy is how good everyone looks. In Asia, it's that smell of the street food. You know, we're not going to get those things, are we?
Well, if you're from Sydney, you can go to Melbourne and people there look much more elegant than we do. So that's kind of like a little microcosm.
This is true. This is true. For me, I feel like, you know, street food culture, you know, we sort of have some things that I seek to copy other people's street food culture. But, you know, it's so organic in places like Southeast Asia, even places like Spain, you know, the tapas culture and pinchos culture in the Basque Country. It's such an integral part of culture in those places that we can't really hope to have that in Australia, I don't think. And it's probably a mistake to try to seek that out.
Yeah, but I think be open to the differences between within Australia, between where you live and where you go. And one of the things I notice when I go, even not that far into regional New South Wales, that I'll go there and I'll just realise how fast I talk. You know, I'm a city person in a hurry.
You're in a hurry.
And those country people take 5 minutes to finish a sentence sometimes. And there's actually a great joy in that 2 hours out of Sydney, you can be interacting with people who are clearly, they're similar to you, but in some ways really quite noticeably different.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's definitely a mistake to which I think we, you know, even those of us who live here and are from here fall into is thinking that Australia is this sort of homogenous, you know, place with only sort of one culture, which I think that's very much a mistake. You know, there are so many different cultural influences and you know, cultural aspects of our own that are great to explore. Now let's sort of talk about some of the things we can recreate from overseas or some of those experiences that we can seek to try to have here. Sue, one of the ones that you mentioned that I really liked was, you know, so many people go to the US with going to this dude ranch sort of idea. And I think it also works in South America, the estancias of Argentina. People want to go on to these farms and ride horses. And that's the thing that you can do right here in Australia. There's cattle droving experiences that you can do here. Is that right?
There are. There's lots of them. There's lots of them in mostly in Queensland and South Australia as well. And they have different levels of comfort. And usually you can go as a beginner as well as an experienced horse rider as well. I've done the Harry Redford cattle drive in outback Queensland, and I've only been on a horse once, which was before then, which was I did an hour's right. horse riding lesson in Sydney before I went because I thought, oh, this is going to be a disaster. And I was actually the worst horse rider.
How did that 1 hour set you up for an experience of cattle droving in the outback?
Not very well, really, because it was just me and lots of 7-year-old girls doing somersaults on their saddles and me just clinging to the reins, looking really uncomfortable and nervous. And actually, obviously, it got worse when I went out cattle droving because I didn't realize what big distances you go. And I had never known well, it never even occurred to me really, where they get the horses from, because they're all retired race horses that go cattle droving, and they're bloody wow. big horses.
They're big animals.
Oh, they are. And they're also very highly strung. So they help you onto them, because I could never get onto them on my own. They kind of lift you on them. And then they give you things like a packet of chips and an orange, and that's going to be your morning wow. break food. And but at the same time, they say don't make any sudden noises because it might startle the horse and it might start galloping. And so I thought there's no way I'm going to eat those chips, and there's no way I'm going to take my hands off the reins to actually peel an orange. So I just kind of thought, no, and there's no way I'm going to drink any water on this horse because I have to get off it again and then get back on, and that's just too hard. So, but it was a great experience. You know, it was fantastic. I didn't like the horse riding much because I think my horse really didn't like me, and it kept trying to get me off his back at every opportunity. But I loved everything else about it.
I'm frightened by how intelligent horses are. I think they know that you're an amateur, and they know what they can get away with, and that worries me.
Oh, they play with you. When they know you're really nervous, they just kind of taunt you. And you can be riding across this huge plain, and there's one tree, and my horse would always go for that one tree and then go right by the branches, so it would try and knock me off from the branches. And we crossed over a dry riverbed, and the horse stopped and started going down on its knees, you know, like a camel. And I thought, this is great. If I'd have known that horses did that, I would have been able to get onto it and off of it much more easily. But people started screaming at me to get off the horse, and so I realized that something was wrong, and I just dived off the horse, and then it just started rolling around in the sand. So it was obviously trying to kill me. But having said that, I hated the riding part of cattle droving, but I loved everything else. I loved sleeping in the swag at night under the stars, even though it rained an awful lot. But in a swag, you don't get wet, which was quite a revelation, really. And I loved every evening. You would all go around a big real fire, and people, I mean, most of them were from the country, and they would tell fantastic stories, and they would recite Banjo Paterson and Henry Lawson, and it was just quite splendid. I loved it. And it was funny because
there must be a real sense of camaraderie after an experience like that as well.
Yeah,
a sort of shared
sure.
experience.
Yeah. And they make the food on a fire, and you all help, and it's great. You end up making some great friends. I mean, I'm still in touch with some of those people from that cattle drove, even though they all said to me, I don't think you should ever go horse riding again. But I think it's probably as good as anything you can do in the States or in South America, really. And even though South America, the horse is kind of a bit smaller, which would be quite nice. But I think it's fantastic.
Although some of the horses that I've ridden in South America, you know, they're so docile. You get on top and you feel like you're in control. And I thought I was, you know, leading it along, and we're following in a nice straight line. And then I thought, well, maybe I'll go over to the side and look at something different, and sort of tugged on the reins. And the horse just kept on plodding along in the direction it wanted to go. And I suddenly realized that actually this is like one of those rides at the fairground where the car is on a rail, and you know, you move the steering wheel all you want, but it's not going anywhere but where it wants to go.
That sounds fantastic. I would much prefer that. I mean, I'd be riding along, and a little calf would go away from the main pack of all the cattle, and they'd say to me, go after that calf. And I'd say, no, you go after it. I'm not going after it.
So it sounds like you're a real asset there. Absolutely. Now, taking a slightly different tack, Uta, one of the experiences that you've nominated to recreate or to try and do a little bit differently is the French country dining experience, and you can apply that to Australia, to some regional areas of Australia. Firstly, talk us through what is the French country dining experience? What does it mean to you, and how is it similar in Australia in some ways?
So it's not just France, but a lot of European countries have this, but France, I think, is the one Australians love the most. And it's this idea that you create a driving holiday around fabulous mm-hmm. food. I mean,
right.
what
Which
is
where
not
the Michelin
to
guide came
that?
From in the first place, isn't it?
Exactly. So that these were the places that you would stop on your route. And so yeah. some people go for the big three Michelin star places out in rural France. Other people choose sort of more humble things. But the idea is that without ever driving too far, you could see some lovely scenery. You could take a walk maybe around a market filled with fresh fruit. Then you retire for lunch in some fantastic, either upscale or more humble joint that serves beautiful food. That is the point of your day. That is the highlight of your day. Later that evening, you check into a little local auberge or inn and you have this beautiful day in beautiful surrounds, have beautiful food that belongs to that place and to that season. And then the next morning you get up, you drive a little bit further and you do it all over again.
I'm in. I'm there.
Yeah, forget this horses that try and break your legs business. No, no. This is the trip. But the good news is that particularly in, say, the last decade, regional dining in Australia has come such a long way that you can really create these amazing itineraries. A lot of these restaurants will have a couple of rooms themselves or there'll be accommodation nearby. There's markets. There's lots of places that you can structure a trip like this. Now, the classic, I have to say, is Victoria. You win hands down. No one can compete. Whether you're going to the gold rush towns like Beechworth, for instance, has Provenance Restaurant, which is amazing. Dalesford, beautiful spa country, amazing restaurants like the Lake House, Bray, which is down more towards the Great Ocean Road. But there's lots of other places as well. You could go to the Southern Forests in WA. You could go to Tasmania. You could go to South Australia. Lots of places you can put together these fantastic little itineraries.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that sounds incredible. As I said before, I'm absolutely sold. I think on the subject of food, though, you know, we're taking it from the country and back into the cities. Australia has such an amazing diversity of cuisines available, and a lot of our cities have these, you know, little pockets of the city where you really can recreate the feel of another country, which I really love. You know, we're talking about Vietnamese food in Cabramatta in Sydney, which is incredible. There's a suburb called Toongabi in Sydney as well, where there's a large Sri Lankan community, and the Sri Lankan food there is excellent. In Melbourne and Adelaide, you've got those European style markets, which you don't really get around the rest of the country, which really do offer, you know, a little slice of another place, which is such a fantastic thing when we can't actually get out there at the moment.
And the great thing about that is you can do it whichever sort of way you lean. If you just want to go out, have a day, pick up some groceries, pick a spot at random and have a lunch there, you can do that. And then there's also lots of companies that will do you a tour and curate a bunch of places along a theme, maybe take you into home cook's place. So you can delve in as much as you like.
Yeah, for sure. And what about drinks? Sue, let's talk about whiskey. You can't go to Scotland at the moment, can't visit the Speyside distilleries, but Tasmania has some great distilleries as well, which offer a great tourism experience as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Lots of them you can go and they tour, they show you how to make whiskey and you make copious notes thinking I'll make some of that at home, but never do. And like Sullivan's, the Tasmanian distillery, Sutherland's Cove, I think in 2014 was named the world's best single malt whiskey. So, I mean, you know, right. The World Whiskey Award. So we're making some great whiskey. We're also making some great gin now as well around the country. So we've got lots of places where you can go and you can tour, you can see how the stuff's made, and you can sample lots of the stuff, which is really important, and then buy it and bring it home again as well. So, yeah, we're kind of really up there with the world's best, I think.
Yeah, and in Tasmania as well, you have that sort of almost like-for-like scenery as well with some parts of Scotland, which is lovely.
And it's nothing like doing a bit of walking to build up a great thirst for whiskey, I think. So you can kind of, in the winter and summer, you can go by the fire and just have a warm whiskey by the fire. It's kind of a lovely feeling.
Being curious and open to new experiences is a way to live, not just a way to travel. And even though we can't fly very far right now, we can still be adventurous. Intrepid is ready for when the travel bubble opens to New Zealand, with new trips that cater for every level of adventure. Whether you want to explore the cellar doors of Hawke's Bay, canyon your way through glowworm caves, or cruise the fjords of Milford Sound, you'll find all the trips at intrepidtravel.com/new-Zealand. Now, what about road trips, guys? I mean, so many people travel to do road trips, particularly in the US. It's and Canada, they seem to be the classic road trip destinations to me, you know, the Route 66, but also just, you know, Highway 1 in California. There's so many amazing drives. But Australia also has some really incredible road trip opportunities. For me, Western Australia is the ultimate. We're starting off in Perth, and whether you drive north or south, there's acres of, you know, miles and miles, kilometers and kilometers of open highway, but also some really beautiful scenery and great little towns to call into. Is that something that you guys have done a bit of in Australia as well?
Yeah, I did a road trip a couple of years ago around New South Wales. And I kind of went, well, I started off in Bowral, Canberra, and then Dubbo, Mudgee, Cowra. It was really good fun. I had some friends over from Britain, and I was thinking, what could I do which is a little bit different with them? And they loved it because we arrived in Dubbo on Australia Day, and it was a fantastic occasion because they had a brass band there. They had, you know, people getting their citizenship. They had a sausage sizzle, and it was great for them. And it was really fun for us as well. I really enjoyed it. And I'd never been to Cowra before. Mudgee is always a lovely little town. And the food that we had everywhere was superlative. It was really surprisingly good, great accommodation, and really good fun. There's nothing like a good road trip. I think it's coming back into fashion now.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's going to be extremely popular, you know, in this sort of post or in the middle of this coronavirus world. It's such a great way to you know, cut down on hassles like going to the airport and expenses as well. And such a great way to see Australia, given the state of our, you know, the excellent state of our roads and the sheer amount of space that we have to explore.
Oh, totally. And the idea of just packing yourself into a car and heading off into the blue yonder, it's got a huge amount of romance to it. And with, you know, with GPS these days, fewer fights about are we lost yet.
Yeah, they're relationship savers, those things. As I can personally vouch. So let's talk about art. You know, obviously a lot of people travel to Europe for those great art galleries over there. But of course there are sort of art galleries as we know them in Australia as well, in the big cities. But, you know, one of the places that you've suggested to view art is the Kimberley up in Western Australia. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I went on a fantastic cruise around the Kimberley from Broome to Darwin. And along the way, you stop at lots of different little islands and parts of the mainland. Mm-hmm. And then you go walking. And sometimes it's quite an interesting walk as well, because you're walking up little old rocky paths and you're climbing higher and higher above the escarpments. And the views are just stunning. The landscape's quite incredible because it's very, very old. I mean, you know, some of the oldest landscapes in the world, really. And then you finally come to an Aboriginal art gallery, and basically it's just outdoor art, and it's just a cave where Aboriginal people in the past have painted and have ground in designs. And it's just stunning. It's absolutely breathtaking. And the fact that it's been there for so many millions of years, just out in the open, and it's survived, is quite incredible. And I mean, we go to Russia and we go to Britain, we go and look at these fabulous galleries, and they are, as you say, quite amazing to see. But, you know, in our own backyard, we've got this much older art, and it's quite extraordinary, some of the designs and some of the meanings of the designs, when you have an Indigenous guide who can talk you through it. And I would really recommend that for everyone. And it's sad because I think a lot of people, like you said, Uta, at the beginning, they say, oh, yes, I'll go to these places one day. And some of the people on the Kimberley trip were kind of a bit older, and they weren't able to climb up to see these galleries. And I think they really missed out. They were very keen to look at our photos when we came back. And I thought, what a shame that they didn't go when they were just a little bit younger. So I think it's really important to go and do go and see these places now while you're younger and fitter and can do that.
Yeah, and it's also rare to have that sort of tangible connection to Australian history and Australian culture like that, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's something that's really to be treasured, I think.
It's also worth doing a bit of research, because the Kimberley ones are beautiful, but there's some other amazing sites as well. And it was only on about, I think, my third or fourth trip to Uluru that I came across a site called Cave Hill, which is a day trip from Uluru. It's actually just over the border in South Australia's APY lands. And that is one of the preeminent rock art sites in Australia. It's part of the Seven Sisters songline, which is just as, you know, the Greeks looked up at the Pleiades in the sky and told stories about the Seven Sisters, the Indigenous people had their own myths about these Seven Sisters. And there are these caves that just have incredible rock art that just are on no tourist itinerary. So, and that was something, as I said, it was about my third or fourth trip that I discovered it. So if you are going into the outback, it's always worth doing a bit of reading and seeing what else is around.
For sure, for sure. And Uta, on the subject of Uluru as well, you mentioned that that's, you know, so many people travel to places like India to have a spiritual experience, to kind of understand the spirituality of a place. But Uluru, I mean, there's undeniable spirituality about that area, regardless of how much you know about it, isn't there?
Oh, it is so powerful. And I love what I love when I go to India about the whole Hinduism thing is it's just a very different way of looking at the world and the stories, the stuff that Shiva gets up to, for instance, where, you know, Shiva the Destroyer, one of the main gods. It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. I never tire of stories about him. I have a bit of a crush on him, actually. But hilariously, I once told my guide, I confessed rather sheepishly that I had a bit of a crush on Shiva. And without missing a beat, he just went, oh, yeah, all the girls want a man like Shiva. So anyway, but the point of that story is that I get exactly the same sort of head spinny feeling when I am in Uluru and listening to those stories. And one of the best things I ever did there actually was I did an astro tour at night, and they showed us that, you know, we tell stories about the constellations, and at certain times of the year when you look up in the skies, you can see a giant emu, but it's not a constellation. It's the black bits between the stars.
Right.
And oh, okay. it spreads over half the sky. And it's the second someone points it out, you go, how have I never seen that before? Because that is so obviously an emu. Come on. And just, I still get excited thinking about that, that just something hidden in plain sight, and just flip the switch at what you're looking at. And that is such an incredible thing to do in Central Australia.
Yeah, and that's like, yeah, in the Blue Mountains. You can look out over the mountains from certain places and you can see the big shape of an emu there as well. And it was
cool.
It's only when somebody pointed it out to me and I thought, exactly the same as you. Wow, how did I not notice that before? So there's just all these amazing things around us that we often just don't know what to look for.
And I think that's the other thing that we don't do enough of. When we go overseas, we're really used to hiring a local guide to help us get underneath the skin of a place. And because we're Australians, we think, oh, yeah, I know this stuff. But depending where you are, just getting a guide for an hour or two can really get you under the skin of a place.
Yeah, and I think that's a really important thing as well, given how hard a lot of the tourism industry has been hit in Australia. You know, those guides are not getting the business from overseas people or for foreign visitors that they normally would. And so for Australians to go out there and you know, give them business and also be able to share their knowledge is such an important thing at the moment, isn't it?
And I think that's a real opportunity for us, since we can't go overseas and we're saving on those airfares, is upscale your experience a little bit, whether it's with a guide or, for instance, if you're going to a wine region, hire a local driver. They all have services where they'll drive you around. It means you can enjoy the tastings more. And again, you also get a local flavour, yet stories behind the places. It's a chance to do things a little bit differently.
Yeah, for sure. Now, Sue, what about the African safari experience? Obviously, so many people save and spend so much money going over to places like South Africa and Tanzania and those sort of places.
And what a waste when all you need to do is look in the sky and see a giant emu.
Exactly right.
Sorry, couldn't resist.
Not at all. Now, Sue, obviously, you know, we have native wildlife here in Australia that we see, you know, out the window of our cars all the time. But what about, you know, is there that African experience? Are we able to do that here?
Yeah, we kind of. I mean, there's nothing that beats a real safari in Africa, because, you know, just the size of the land and the wildness of the animals. But, you know, on the other hand, you can do similar things in Australia, and you can see the animals much more easily. Like, you can go to open plain zoos, like the Taronga Western Plains Zoo, is in Dubbo, about 6 hours from Sydney, and that's a really good experience. You know, you go in a little cart, or if there's more of you, in a minibus, and you go around and you look at the lions, and they're all kind of open and out. They kind of seem a little bit more docile and a bit tamer than they might be in somewhere in Africa. But you can actually see them much more easily because they're not going to eat you and they're not going to hide so much. And that's a great experience. So you can go to Dubbo or you can go to the Werribee Open Range Zoo near Melbourne or Monarto Zoo near Adelaide. And or you can even sleep at that fabulous hotel in Canberra where you have the animals coming up to the glass doors and looking at you while you look at them. So there are lots of great experiences you can have in Australia just as well as in Africa. And that's
it's not so incredibly different to some of the African experiences that you know, particularly in places like South Africa. You know, a lot of times you go into private game reserves, which can be quite small, and you know the guides know exactly where the animals are. They know exactly what animals are out there. You know, maybe it feels wilder and it feels different to that experience in Australia, but you know, technically, really, it's not that different, is it?
Yeah, and there are some pluses of looking at those animals here as well, because you know that when you're looking at a rhino in Australia, that rhino is very unlikely to be poached for its horn. You know, when you're looking at elephants, the same thing, they're very much unlikely to be poached for their tusks. So that's kind of a really nice feeling, really. And some places you can go in Africa, particularly in South Africa, where they've had hunting in certain reserves, the animals can be really shy and really nervous. And that always makes me feel a bit sad. I mean, I like it when animals are relaxed around humans. That feels much nicer. I mean, they're still wild animals, but they don't think you're just going to get up a gun and, you know, and they have that generational memory of being hunted. And so they're really anxious when humans are around. But that's not the same in Australia. So that's, there's lots of things to be said for it too.
And Uta, obviously, you know, Australia has so many national parks which don't have the sort of fame of you know, Yellowstone or Yosemite or anything like that, but there are some truly incredible natural landscapes and protected areas here for us to explore.
Oh, there's some incredible places. And it's, I think with national parks, it's all about an epic sense of scale and something that just really, you go, I've never seen anything quite like that before. And there are some fantastic places in Australia. I actually, only a couple of years ago, went to the Flinders Ranges for the first time, and that was sensational. I mean, Wilpena Pound is the famous feature there because it's this giant natural amphitheatre, which is just extraordinary. Yeah. But the mountains themselves and the colours and even the way that they sort of, the trees sort of change depending on the levels of altitude. And that's fascinating to see. Or if you head up to the Northern Territory, I mean, okay, everyone knows Uluru, everyone knows Kakadu National Park, which is fantastic. But my favorite hidden gem is Litchfield, which is a couple of hours out of Darwin. And you don't go to Litchfield on the weekends, because that's what Darwin locals do.
They all know about it.
They're hanging out there. And the reason they go there is it's just filled with amazing waterfalls and water holes. So there's, you know, there's some that are quite shallow and you can have your kids splashing around. And there's some that are, you walk down a bush track and then you find this beautiful giant waterhole fed by twin waterfalls. Or sometimes you have to sort of go up a track, sort of up towards terraced cliffs, and you have these succession of rock pools set into the top of the cliff, and you just look out right across the park, which is sandstone escarpments and sweeping valleys covered in bush. And honestly, that's one of the best views I've seen in my life.
Yeah, right. Amazing. Now, guys, we are going to briefly head across the ditch to New Zealand to talk about some of the experiences that you can have over there. Now, you know, when I think about New Zealand, the South Island is the place that I've spent the most time, and it's almost in some ways a like for like for the Swiss experience. You know, these amazing mountains, the great skiing, the great hiking, the lodges that you can stay in. Sue, would you go along with that? Does New Zealand have that to offer?
Oh, it does. And it also has the luges, which I really like as well, because I'm not very good at skiing. And really, I mean, it doesn't have the fondue, but who wants fondue, to be honest? We all want hot chocolate, and there's plenty of hot chocolate. And kind of when you look around Queenstown, the food is just superb. And the great accommodation, really fantastic after-ski experiences, really good pre-ski experiences as well. And it is really beautiful, great snow, lots of different pitches as well, so they cater for different standards of skiers. And it's probably much cheaper, really, than going skiing over in Perisher going skiing over in Canada or the US or Aspen and those places. Yeah, I really like it.
I've always just really enjoyed how different, particularly the South Island, but all of New Zealand really is scenically to Australia. You know, Australia has this huge breadth of landscapes, but we don't really have that proper alpine scenery. And you just fly across the ditch to New Zealand and there it is. There's the huge snow-capped peaks, the glaciers, the green valleys. Uta, it's such a different place to Australia in that sense, isn't it?
It's incredible, but I think it's also surprisingly diverse. When you look at New Zealand, it's not a big country, is it? It's a beautiful country, but it's not supersized. But you have these sort of really, as you say, these spectacular mountain landscapes. One place I really love is Abel Tasman National Park, which is at the very north of the South Island. And it has a completely different feel. And there are times you could almost think, you know, you're somewhere in a Central American national park. It's this lushness and this tranquility that is just, and you could go do a kayaking tour and it's a fantastic experience.
Yeah, and I was once in the South Island, kind of around Fox's Glacier, and I was with a friend and we were just traveling around together and we were just blown away by the scenery. And then we actually got snowed in at Milson Sound and we ended up together, because there was nothing else to do when we were snowed in together, really, than get to know each other more. And we've been together 30 years now. So that was kind of a good, I feel very affectionate towards New Zealand for that experience. So that was great.
That's a corker of a story.
It is indeed. Well, I got snowed in New Zealand once and I got snowed in by myself. So I spent 3 days... I spent 3 days around a lake in the South Island doing absolutely nothing. I had no phone reception, no TV reception.
Oh.
The snow was sort of chest deep, so I had to wade down to the local store and pick up some supplies every now and then and just sit there and drink my lovely Otago Pinot by myself.
Oh, no. So isolation wasn't all bad.
That's right. There were things to get me through. Speaking of wineries, though, you know, New Zealand does, like Australia, has a lot of different wine regions, which, you know, they don't have the sort of history of maybe the French and Italian wine regions, but certainly in terms of, you know, if you were going to plan to go to California for wine or to Argentina for wine, New Zealand certainly has some places like that, like, you know, the Otago region. So some spectacularly beautiful wine country around there, and also Hawke's Bay, also Marlborough. There's a real sort of fledgling cultural centres around there, isn't there?
And the charm about New Zealand's wine regions, I think, is that most of those vineyards are still family owned. You know, it's that feeling that you can go in and chat to the people who are actually involved in making the wine. If they don't own it, they've probably worked with those people for quite a while. And it's, you know, Californian wine tasting in particular, it can be very schmick and very polished and you sometimes feel like a bit of a number. But here, when you go to New Zealand, you just get to chat, have a really good chat. New Zealanders are always up for a chat, God bless them.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about Kiwis, aren't we? So they're going to be friendly.
It's super friendly. And it seems there's always another wine region, just another 15 minutes down the road, which is the other great thing about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, guys, unfortunately, we are running out of time. But there was probably a little bit more we could have covered in New Zealand. It's another great destination, but, you know, it's a big world. There's a lot to do, which we can't take everything in. But to finish off, I was going to ask you guys about, you know, obviously we've talked about there are some amazing experiences that we had planned overseas this year that we're not going to be doing. What's the one that you're planning to replace this year? What are you going to do instead of one of those great trips? Uta, you had plenty planned. What are you going to do instead?
Well, one of my highlights on my trip to Namibia that was planned, I've been to Namibia before, but I've never been to Fish River Canyon, which is this amazing canyon in the middle of nowhere that I'm so keen to explore. Can't do that. So what I'm going to try and do instead is get up to Kings Canyon in the Red Center, where I haven't been since I was a child and which I remember as an absolute wonderland at the top of the canyon, baking hot, dry, And at the bottom of the canyon, this sort of lush wonderland, this sort of miniature oasis fed by the pooled water down there. So that's what I want to go and explore again.
Nice one. Sounds like a very good idea. And how about you, Sue?
I think I'm going to go with Uta.
Oh, girls road trip. Okay. Yay.
Well, this year I was meant to be going to Uzbekistan and Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan. And so there's nothing really to replace that with. So I thought instead, as soon as the border gets opened with New Zealand, I'll go over there and I'll kind of go to Auckland, which I think is a really underrated city. I like Auckland a lot. And I'll go up to the Coromandel, which is a really beautiful part of the countryside, not too far from Auckland, really, and just kind of sit and gaze at the water, have a swim, and kind of just really enjoy the atmosphere, I think. It's a beautiful part of the world, and I haven't been there for such a long time. And this offers a really good opportunity to go over there and really renew that acquaintance and enjoy it again.
Absolutely. And there are some quite spectacular mountain ranges and scenery in Central Asia, which you can certainly recreate in New Zealand without too much trouble, I would have thought. The trip that I was really hoping to do this year, I've never been to the Maldives, and I really wanted to go there on a sort of liveaboard boat and do some diving and some sailing around there. So to replace that, I'm planning to get over to WA. You know, Western Australia offers so many opportunities for scuba diving, especially, but also boating and just that sort of outdoor coastal lifestyle. So I think that'll be a pretty good replacement. Sue and Uta, I want to thank you so much for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks, Ben.
Great to be with you.
And if you would like to subscribe to Flight of Fancy, you can find us on iTunes or your favourite podcasting app. Don't forget to rate and review if you've been enjoying it. And you can dig into the archives and find plenty of episodes back there covering a whole range of topics. If you'd like to get in touch with us, we're on Facebook. There's a Facebook group called Flight of Fancy that you can join. And of course, thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time on Flight of Fancy.
Thanks for listening to this podcast brought to you by Intrepid Travel. Sign up to the Intrepid e-newsletter for more travel inspiration and to be the first to hear about great deals and competitions. Visit intrepidtravel.com to subscribe today.
Flyer Fancy is hosted by Ben Groundwater. This podcast is produced by me, Annie Dang. Audio production by Lap Fam. And our digital editor at traveller.com.au is Craig Platt.